outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bavada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain.
So I was right last week, Kyle. I was. I called you COVID infested. You said, no, I don't know that I am. And true, we didn't know, but now we do.
Now we know. I am COVID infested, unfortunately.
It's been a tough week.
Yeah, it has. It's been a challenging week. I was on our way up to our Harrison Ranch to get some time alone because I figured why not go spend some time up there since I had to isolate anyway. And on my way up, I got a call that my COVID test was positive. And then on my way home, I found out my grandfather had been put on hospice and had passed away.
Oh.
So it was not exactly the greatest of weekends.
No, I can't imagine. And then your wife's not been well either, though. She's then got a call from the CDC. So they're after you.
They are to do some tracing.
Oh,
they want to do some COVID tracing.
And I heard you guys quarantine the way they recommend that you quarantine.
What do you mean? Possibly.
As I understand, you were supposed to quarantine from the entire family, and that didn't work out too well. So.
Yeah, they notified me 5 days after my positive COVID test. The CDC calls me and says, oh, yeah, by the way, you shouldn't have any contact with your pets. And if you can avoid contact with your wife, you should do that. And you should avoid contact with your daughter. Like, oh, perfect. Yeah, that didn't happen at all.
Did they tell you to stay off social media as well?
No, they didn't. However, they did ask if I had enough food to be able to maintain staying in my home for the next 10 days without leaving. So that was an interesting question. I was like, okay, Wyoming, are you going to deliver me food to my house if I can't? That would be great. So I should have said yes, but unfortunately, we had already just gone to Walmart. So,
well, there's untold number of proprietors that will bring food to your door for a fee. So.
Well, there are in California. In Wyoming, when we are naturally socially distanced, there are not food delivery services out here.
Oh, there aren't. Oh, and not even Uber or anybody, huh?
No, the nearest Uber is maybe in Fort Collins, which is 2 hours away.
Then you need a loving friend or relative to go shopping for you and leave it on your doorstep.
That's true.
On with life. It's cheaper that way anyway, but.
And we're old school that way, you know. I got three calls from three different community members, one being a family member and two other friends that offered to go and purchase groceries for us and or take care of any resources that we needed. And so that was a huge blessing.
Good. Now, is your wife going to be retested? Or
she is. She's going in tomorrow morning to get retested. Yep.
So you're still going to quarantine together. So whatever one gets, you're both going to share, richer for poor, sickness and health, the death do us part kind of thing. You're just
till death do us part.
Anyway. Not only Kyle and I today, but we're going to bring in someone else to join us for today's discussion because the topic we hope to get to in a little bit. I want to introduce Tracy Levinson, who's been here a number of times on the podcast. Hi, Tracy.
Hello.
From deep in the heart of Texas.
That's right.
Tracy's the author of Unashamed, Candid Conversations about Dating, Love, Nakedness, and Faith. We've talked about that book before. You can look at some of the past podcasts we've done together. And Tracy, last time we talked, which is about a year ago, it was before the pandemic, I believe, on the podcast, and you had some situations going on in your home that were a little bit scary.
Oh, we did. Well, first, I want to acknowledge Kyle. Kyle, I'm sorry about your grandfather. That's hard stuff.
It is.
My husband had gotten a cancer diagnosis, and he had went through two surgeries, chemo, radiation, and it all was right before we had made a big move to a different part of the state of Texas. So it was one of the hardest couple of years actually, but the hardest year of my life so far.
Yeah. And you said the other day when we were talking, you've learned a lot on that. So we may have to have you back some point and see the things that God's done in your life through all that stuff that you guys went through.
Yes.
So how have you guys suffering through the election here? As we're recording this, it's a Wednesday afternoon. There's no winner that's been declared. We're now 24 hours almost since polling places have closed, at least in the East Coast. How are we doing?
Go ahead, Tracy. What are your thoughts? I'm going to let you jump on that grenade first.
I was from Texas. I had no expectation going into this. I think everybody voted their conscience. And you can tell that the nation is very divided. I definitely think in terms of polling, if we're going to pay attention to polls, we probably need some sort of new system for that because the polls were pretty off. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I am hoping that everything will be fair and people will be graceful and we will be respectful and, you know, all the good God stuff.
Wow. Yeah. That one would hope. Kyle, what about you?
I love and I'm very thankful that there are optimistic people that are still out there. That's encouraging to hear. So thank you, Tracy. Thank you for restoring my faith in humanity. Honestly, I've been kind of back and forth on it. I've had lots of people that have been reaching out to me within the last 24 hours that are on both sides of the argument. Some of them are experiencing significant fear and trepidation and angst, and some of them are just taking it one day at a time. I don't want to try to forecast what it might look like. As it stands right now, it looks like it would be a 270 to 268 electoral college win. Talk about living in unprecedented times and trying to navigate that with a sense of grace and trust and rest when you've got a national pandemic and then you have an election that, like you said, Tracy, it definitely has highlighted in a lot of regards how split or how polarized our country is.
And I mean, I do like to think of it in the big picture, which is, you know, when people get so fearful about it, I'm kind of like, well, I mean, look at Rome, look at Greece. I mean, we're an experiment. We don't know how long this experiment's going to last. I don't want my hope to be in any leader or in any sort of nation. And so which kingdom or do you want to be, you know, which kingdom is your ultimate kingdom? So I know that's easy to say when people are afraid. But I do think you have to get your eyes on, you know, the United States is not the end all be all of the universe.
Yeah. I've heard from people on both sides of the hope in this election and who are just absolutely devastated at the very possibility their side might lose. And
yeah,
270 electoral votes will do it. Kyle, I just don't think we're going to know for a month or more if they're going to go into lawsuits about all this stuff and which votes count and don't count. It's not a very good time for our country to be polarized and then not to have a clear winner. I mean, eventually we'll get to a clear winner. You got to count the votes and you got to do it, and then we'll have a clear winner. But it's going to be on such a narrow thread that we haven't solved anything.
Yeah.
The polarization will just grow. I ran into this old quote from Senator Danforth. He's a Republican from Missouri. And I unfortunately, I think what he says is very true. The essence of our breakdown in politics is the mentality that I'm right and you're totally wrong. And because I'm so sure that I'm right and you're totally wrong, I am justified in destroying you as a person. And man, that to me is the horror of what's going on, both left and right. Is that reality right there? And he said, in the absence of humility can poison any chance for a collaborative culture. Somehow America, if it's going to survive, has got to find its way around the I'm right and you're wrong on very narrow votes in the country and find a way to collaborate and be kind and gracious and not just ram our agenda down your throat because we got one more vote than you did in the last election. And both parties have been doing it for a number of past elections. So this would take a major change of spirit in both parties. And I'm not optimistic, but I am optimistic about what Tracy said. God's purpose is unfolding in the earth no matter what. And he works as well in times of extremity and pain and persecution, probably better even, because people, as the Beatitudes say, man, when we haven't got anything else to fall back on but him, we're our better selves. When we think we can use our political power, self-effort, whatever, to get our way, Christianity's always been at its worst in terms of bringing the life and love of Jesus into a world that needs him. So whatever way this goes, I think God's going to keep doing his work in us. And I feel bad for those that are so devastated and fearful. Just say, hey, hold on. Yeah. Your God's bigger than this. Well, we don't want to talk about the election the entire time. We could, but we'll know more in a week from now, maybe, than we know today. Maybe not.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I was talking about an email I got from a guy in Germany with Kyle last week, and we were going to maybe talk about it on the podcast. But then we got down to it thinking, you know what? We really need a woman's voice in here as well. So we thought, Tracy, it'd be great. I sent her the email and just said, hey, have a look. Would you be interested? And she said, yeah. So we're going to jump in. Let me read the email to you. We're going to keep this from anonymous in Germany. Wrote me this. It took me half of my life to just discover that I am worthy to be seen, or in other words, worthy to be looked at. I recently watched an interview, and the guy said that God told him that he sees him and rejoices in seeing him. This simple sentence hit me and brought a long-forgotten situation from childhood into my memory. I was a boy discovering changes in my body due to puberty. In the evening, I walked up naked to my dad, who was already in bed, to ask him if all this was normal. He mumbled something, turned to the other side. So it is only recently that I realized that this is the root up for lots of patterns in my life. I always felt unimportant, had the impression that what can I bring is not worthy to be looked at. Even in business meetings, I still have trouble speaking up because I think others could bring it better to the point. My dad didn't look at me, didn't assure me, didn't tell me that I'm all right, and that he is proud of me, that his boy is becoming a man. This has impacted me on many different levels. I tried to get identity and assurance in alcohol and bad relations and other stuff that brought me no end of troubles. And of course, it impacted my relationship with God the Father, as you might imagine. I tried to approach God as I did back in the time with my dad and ask him to look at me. Father, am I all right? Do you see me? What do you feel when you see me? I need to hear what these answers are to bring healing to these wounds. I kind of thought this is relevant to a God loves me journey, and I kind of feel that this is a huge issue with male spirituality. I had a bit of exchange with this man. Gosh, what a painful thing to have happen in life and to feel like you're not worthy to even be acknowledged. What were your thoughts, Kyle? I know you work with a lot of young people, been through a lot of stuff. What were your thoughts when you heard that email?
My first gut reaction was that my heart broke for him, and yet how common that story is. And, you know, the hard part is that as parents, specifically as fathers, there are those times where we don't even notice those moments. We have no idea that it's that impactful or the depth of the question that's being presented to us. And yet for the son, his heart was out there on the line. And those moments act as time capsules in our life. There's messages that the enemy tries to bring in. There's emotions, and there's messages about who we are and our value in those moments that get locked in this time capsule, and it leaks out into our life and it influences every aspect of our life. But until we open that up, until the Holy Spirit creates an opportunity for that to be opened up and for a new message to be shared, it's deeply life altering.
Tracy, what do you think?
I am a mom and a teacher. And when I heard that, you know, it's like, you just think of a boy. I mean, I can't help but see the adolescent boy and who was looking for his dad to say, who am I? And am I okay? And is this normal? I mean, part of the letter said that he'd never seen his father naked, right? Mm-hmm. And he didn't know if what was happening to his body was okay. And really all his dad turned his body away from him and was silent. So like there's this chasm of who am I and some sort of longing. And at one, like he went on, as you said, to try to turn to alcohol or relationships, and nothing satisfied. And so I guess my heart just aches for his longing to know, is he okay? And it does relate to the God journey. I mean, I love that he reached out to you, Wayne, because there's something about God. Whenever you're suffering, there's something that God has that we need. And it's right there and it's for you. But it's like you have to turn your face to the Father. And sometimes you need someone in your life that's not even your own, it's not even God directly, but another person to say, hey, buddy, you're okay. I mean, I'm sure you've had, Kyle, that opportunity many times in your office. And that's Wayne, you go around the world. You know, sometimes you need a person who is intimate with the Father to turn around and say, yeah, he sees you, you're okay.
Sometimes that communicates to another person. Another person sees me. Another person sees worth in me. One of my favorite lines from The Shack in the Cave is Sophia saying to Mac, you've judged your children worthy of love. And that's what the Father does. And I've never wrestled with this in my life. I don't know what it is about my upbringing. I've never wrestled with, am I worthy of love? Even when I've failed, even when I've done things wrong, I haven't said, oh gosh, I'm a failure. But I know lots of people do. I know lots of people didn't get their identity locked into something better than their performance or this young kid. I mean, to me, and some of my interactions with him, we're not going to try and counsel this guy specifically. It's just an email. Yeah. So it opens up a topic for us to talk about rather than trying to help him. But one of the things I thought of is that this was probably a seminal moment, but a seminal moment because it was a repeating pattern with his dad. It wasn't just this incident. And I want to reassure parents, you can have a bad moment with your kids. It's not going to ruin them for life. But if you constantly treat your kids like they're to be not seen and not heard, and you push them to the side, as the old days, they were to be seen and not heard because they're all cute. Look at the cute little kids. And then that was it. You know, sit in the back corner during Thanksgiving meal and say anything and disturb the family. We've moved away from that, thankfully. But it would seem to me we've got a father here who may have been incredibly insecure in his own humanity. And a naked boy walking into his room for whatever reason was more than he could bear. And the son didn't seem ready for puberty anyway, like he knew these changes were coming and knew they would be somewhat normative. Instead, he's looking for reassurance. And here's where a dad could have made up for a lot of mistakes by just looking and say, son, this is very normal. My boy is becoming a man. And just take him through that talk. And what better time than, well, better time would have been 6 months earlier, to be honest. But if you haven't done it then, this is a good time to go to that place with your son and help him see these changes are normal. And that would have made, I don't know how big a difference that would have made in his life, but I think it sounds like it would have been significant because he attaches that back to a whole lot of things in his life where he's navigated most of his life not feeling like he's worthy to be noticed, worthy to be seen, worthy to be loved by other people. Yes, people at work and Father God. And the questions he asks at the end, I think are so powerful. God, do you see me? And what do you feel when you see me? I think those are two really, really important questions for all of us.
Well, and the amount of courage to actually verbalize those questions, right? Because if you actually speak those out, if you usher that prayer and you don't get a response or the fear of what might be heard back, I mean, that takes an incredible amount of courage, especially if he's gone a long period of his life where that question hasn't come back in a positive way, and to still risk, to still be bold enough to say, no, I need to hear from the Father on this. I need to hear God's perspective. That takes a lot of courage.
It gives me hope too, because, you know, I came from more of an atheist background. And as I began to kind of seek God and like, what does God think of me? But the fact that he had the desire to turn to God and ask God the questions for me somehow gives me like, almost like evidence that he had a hope inside of him that God would have a good answer, that God had written something in his heart that made him want to hear from God. Yes, son, you're mine. You're fine. You're okay.
Isn't that what we all need to know from God? Because the religious upbringing I think many of us had, certainly part of mine was, God's always a bit disappointed in me. So God might see me, he might know where I am, but then you didn't do today all that I thought you should. I mean, the expectations of religion were incredible. And if it was to be holy as he is holy, then every day has a perfection expectation to it. And not any day do you meet that unless you trick yourself into thinking you did. And so every day you just feel like God's a little disappointed in us. And that makes it easy for us to hide from God. So the hiding goes on both ways, right? It doesn't go on from God, but we tend to, I notice this, I think in most of our lives, if we're in an environment where somebody makes us uncomfortable, we usually try not to look at them. We usually try not to have eye contact because we still want to get into, we don't want to get into it with them, or we don't want to acknowledge them, or people walk by somebody that's, physically challenged or whatever, and to avert their eyes, or somebody that's homeless and pleading for money or whatever. It's easy to not see something that makes us uncomfortable. And then if you're the source of that, if you feel like I make people uncomfortable, so they turn their eyes away from me, it shows how important our gaze is in loving the people around us, to see them, to acknowledge them, to make them worthy of our love, to give them some time, some attention, some conversation, some something, and not just avert our eyes to the good people or the nice people or the people we kind of, the beautiful people that we like to hang out with. And I think that's real important, because I've seen this in a lot of people who just feel like they're invisible because people don't acknowledge their presence in a room, or they may say something and then no one acknowledges what they said. No one talks back. No one gives input because it's awkward. It may lead to a difficult conversation, or for whatever reason, people find it difficult. And that just reinforces this guy's sense of unworthiness, it has, that drives him to alcohol and bad relationships and other things in his life. And it shows me how important we are in engaging other humanity in a way that opens doors into their worthiness. Go ahead, Tracy.
But he did try some of those things, and he said it didn't work. But then there was that, still that God thing in his heart that it's hope. It's that hope that maybe I am loved. Maybe he does see me. Maybe I am okay.
And I think the gist of the email is he's coming to that discovery. This is not just, I'm starting fresh now, God, how do you see me? I think he is really leaning into that love light, but that's been a big part of it for him, is to just say, God, am I all right? Right where I am today with, which, you know, puberty, body changing, things happen. I guess part of why I want to talk about this with you guys was how much he suggested this was a part of male spirituality. And how much it, I mean, I would think these same thing, and I said that to him, I would think these same things affect women maybe even more so, because body consciousness for women is even greater than body consciousness for guys. And that's why I said, you know, we and I talk about this alone, Kyle. We could have Tracy in the room or somebody that can offer the female perspective, at least a female perspective. I don't think Tracy speaks for all female. I don't think Kyler speaks for all millennials, and I certainly don't speak for all old people. What do you think of the male-female component to this kind of thing? I frankly don't see one, but there may be one here I'm blind to.
I had a mom. Listen to me. I am a mom, and I have two adult children, but one is a boy and one is a girl. And there was something my mother did well, in that she didn't make a big deal about nakedness. She didn't sexualize it. She just would be like, you know, we were taking a bath, like, you know, we'd shake our booties. And there was just a playfulness, and there was, it just, nakedness was not associated. Now, I didn't grow up in a Christian home, but there was no shame connected to nakedness. And then when my body became, you know, when I started going through puberty and stuff, my mom's big focus was, you need to be safe. Like, be careful. It was all about safety. So I got lucky. I escaped the shame. I escaped the whole shame, except for just my own consciousness. When I got older and I started doing sexual things, and my conscience didn't feel right or good about some of those things, but I didn't ultimately feel shame. But what I see is that shame, and I mean, I'm sure Kyle can speak to this, but shame is one of the biggest parts of this whole thing. And I didn't even raise my kids in it, but just because they grew up in the Christian culture, they still picked, you know, grabbed a hold of some of it for themselves.
And I would love your thoughts on this as well, Tracy. You know, looking at my family in the way that, especially during that time of adolescence where your identity is really being formed and you're starting to learn who you are as an individual, not just as a part of the family system. My sisters, my mom was very intentional with my sisters. I went at it alone. So for me, like, for example, I remember when I had my first wet dream, I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea what had happened. And there was no safe space to have that dialogue. It was just, well, hopefully that doesn't happen again, because that was awkward and I have no idea what just happened there. But even, you know, my body changing, I taught myself how to shave. I mean, all those things that were quote unquote potential milestones or conversation pieces for the masculine portion of it, I did those alone. It was very much a figure it out on your own. We're not going to have those conversations because they're uncomfortable, or it wasn't safe. I didn't feel like I was safe enough with my dad to ask him those types of questions.
For me as a mom, my son went through a season where he struggled with porn, and I didn't know about it, but when he got to a place where he wanted to talk about it. We had a conversation, and because I kind of set the platform of just your body is, there's nothing evil about your body. It's like money. You know, you can do evil things with money. You can do evil things with your body, but it's just neutral. And so I said to him, it just popped out of my mouth, and I go, wet dreams are God's gift. Don't feel embarrassed. And if you ever have one, and you're running late for school, because he was all the time, just say, hey, Mom, can you wash my sheets? And I won't say anything, and I'll wash your sheets. I'd be happy to do that for you. He told his friends, and they were all laughing about it. But I don't know. It's like removing that sense of shame.
And it'd be intriguing to hear from the female perspective as well, but especially in masculine world. And I love your thoughts on this too, Wayne, is just there's a special impartation of an older male speaking masculinity and strength into a younger male, affirming that they do have what it takes, that there is a strength to be found in you, that you're able to do it, that you have what it takes. And I really feel like in a lot of regards, that is a unique relationship that is specific male. It's not that women can't speak and don't play a huge role in a young man's development of life. Absolutely not. Not wanting to disregard that by any means. But there is this special, unique impartation from one male to another. And I would probably say similar for one mom to a daughter. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
Well, one thing I've always heard, and I don't know how significant this is, I think I could say, yeah, maybe it played out in my family, that the daughter really takes a lot of her identity from the eyes of her father, from what the father says about her in terms of her attractiveness. And I don't mean sexual attractiveness. I just mean that she is pretty, that she matters in the world, that she counts. She takes. I think my son, I don't see any difference. I had a boy and a girl, and I don't see any difference between, I mean, I related to them differently because of personality type and whatever. But they both needed something from me to validate their humanity. I think they both did.
Mm-hmm. I was the same way. I looked to my father to tell me, am I worthy of being listened to? Am I pretty? So I did that.
I know the masculinity, femininity thing always messes me up, to be honest, because I think the stereotypical view of what masculinity, the macho, go in the woods and take my shirt off and beat my chest and, you know, shoot deer and birds and, you know, that's and smoke a cigar by the campfire at the end of the day, that's masculinity. And femininity is princess dresses and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I just go, I don't know that those two stereotypes fit well in the world. And they certainly haven't served Christians well, because not all women fit the princessy profile thing, and not all men want to beat their chest and smoke cigars in the woods. So I think some of that gets really overplayed, but I wouldn't discount the fact that there is a male, why God gave us two parents, male and female, that there isn't an important aspect in both of those relationships, father to son, father to daughter, mother to son, mother to daughter. But I don't think Sarah and I sat down and like, okay, this is what you're going to give them. This is what we never did that. It was just, we love them as the kids God gave us. And we saw the opportunities we had to input in their life when they were listening. And we saw those moments we were trying to input into their life and they weren't listening. And we decided not to bang our head against the wall and try and communicate stuff, particularly as they got older, that they really weren't ready to hear yet. But this, so that's why I struggle with, is this just a masculine journey, needing to be comfortable in their body, needing to be seen? I think all of that would run across every human. Needs to know that what I'm going through is normal, that I'm worthy of love, that I'm worthy to be listened to, worthy to be seen. And if you don't have that in your sense of humanity because that somehow got robbed from you, yeah, you really do need to find it in God. You really do. And that's just the best place to find it, because there's no one that God deems unworthy of love. There's no one that God doesn't love, and he doesn't see you in all your failures. He sees you, the person you are, with your fears, with your doubts, with your struggles. He sees you at the heart of it, and your struggles don't make you less endearing to God. If anything, they make you more endearing. that God's really endeared to the broken places of our heart and life. And God wants to crawl in with us and say, the reason we're in those broken places is because your humanity got twisted somehow by the devil, by a bad parent, by friends at school made fun of you, by whatever. It got twisted somehow. And the best place to untwist it is inside the affection of a father who knows you, loves you, where nothing. And I love what Tracy brings to the whole discussion about shamelessness, because religion is so used shame to keep people from even talking about their sexuality with God, talking about their porn addiction with God. So I got to pretend that's not here, because there's so much shame that it just blocks me from seeing, accessing God, or feeling like he would even want to be near me till I can overcome all that stuff. And then I can come back, and then maybe God might like me because I'm good. But then you haven't brought God into where you haven't been good, but he still sees you as his beloved son, his beloved daughter. And that's what I hope people find, no matter how it gets twisted. It might have been a bad moment for a dad. He might have been just too tired and didn't know how to deal with it and rolled over. But you had an incredible impact on your kid, and somehow that never came up again in that family to explore it. And I know lots of people like that, because those things are awkward. So you don't want to, you know, make your dad like you or make your mom like you, or they have to like me or whatever. So then some of the important things will get talked about. But I love where he's come to, man. I'm going to find out from God. Am I all right? Do you see me? And what do you feel when you see me? I know I wake up every morning, and what gets my day going is I know I wake up to the delight of a father that has an adventure for me today through whatever the world's going to throw at me. That's a delight to me. I didn't used to live that way. I used to live with, I didn't wake up with that delight. I woke up with a lot of pressure to perform well. And I went to bed at night frustrated that I hadn't performed well. And I was going to do better the next day. So confess my sins and God forgive me. And I'm going to get up the next day and try harder. That just wore me out. Now I actually wake up knowing God delights in me. It's not, you know, God's kind of holding his breath. Don't make a mistake today, Wayne, because that'll ruin everything. He's ready to just crawl in my life with me. Doubts, fears, struggles, temptations, all of it. And there's nothing I can bring to him for which I need to feel ashamed and which I need to withdraw from him in some kind of, you know, I'm a horrible pity party kind of a person. And this is the place for me. People need to find that affection from the Father. And I love the courage to, like you said, ask the question, say, God, how do you see me today? And you need to know that not from Wayne. You need to know that from him. You need to have that sense that the Holy Spirit wants to enliven in your heart, where I know God's demeanor towards me. I know when God's delighting. I also know when God's disappointed at something I've done, not in me, but something I've done. And that disappointment, this guy, God, I didn't really want you to respond that way. And I go, oh boy, I don't either. But see, there's no shame in that either. I don't go, oh God, God's disappointed me. It's horrible. I'm just going, okay, I'm disappointed in that too. So now I join God in the disappointment. And now I can say, what in me allows that to come out? And how are you going to change that? And it just opens up a whole different dialogue with him. That's how crazy I am.
I like how crazy you are. And my favorite thing about what you're saying is, approaching God like that, one of the beliefs that I have to have is that he doesn't have favorites. He doesn't have any favorites. He literally, and that is something that is, I've noticed the religious mind has a hard time with, because they put themselves on a performance track and they disqualify themselves. And then they might look at you, I mean, you know, we know you're flawed, but they might say, oh, look what Wayne's doing in the world. Or they'll pick somebody that they think is more holy than them and think, well, I mean, of course the pastor, God probably listens to him, his prayers. And so it's this mindset what's so flawed, because if he's a dad, he literally does not have a favorite. Yep. There is no favorite. And so you're just as much his favorite as anyone you imagine would be his favorite. You are just as much. And I do the same thing when I do something stupid. If I have too much wine or I gossip or something, I go, ooh. And what I try to think of is like, I'm made in God's image. I'm his kid. His spirit lives in me. So when I act like a dumbass and do something stupid, I say, wow, that's not who I am. And then I just agree with God, which the word repent means to, you know, to turn and to I'm agreeing. I'm agreeing with God. Like, that's stupid. I'm not made for that. And then I do the same thing. I just say, God, help me to respond differently. You know, I'm a new creation with a new heart who's loved. And either I'm your favorite and everybody else is your favorite, or you don't have favorites. But either way, I'm on a level playing field with everybody else.
I do that with my grandkids all the time. They're all my favorite. And that's why I tell them all the time. So you're my favorite. And everyone looks at me and I go, yeah, you're my favorite, really. And we just keep passing it around. They're always having fun with it. But they really know there is no favorite one. You're all my favorite. And that's what you just shared about how we invite God even into our broken places. For you to say that was stupid is not to say God thinks I'm stupid. And that distinction may seem minor, but it's huge. I did something that disappointed God is not, oh, God's disappointed in me, or God's, you know, God's now just wanes on the outs with God. And I think that maturity to make that connection between who we are, our identity, and where God is helping us live more freely in the world by teaching us stuff. And that's two different things.
I completely agree with what you both were sharing, and I love it. I think, but the distinction you just made, Wayne, is a big one, because you're talking about behavior versus core identity belief. That this is who I recognize or identify myself as versus recognizing an action or a behavior that wasn't in alignment with who you want to be. And those are huge, huge differences. Yep. And yet so often, and I don't know, I've found often in the institutional religious background that I had, that distinction wasn't made. There wasn't a clear line between shame and guilt. They were one and the same. They were synonymous. And it's okay if you feel both of them, because that's totally fine. As long as it changes your behavior and gets you in line, it's okay. And yet as God began to saturate the conversation with his love, that began to get untangled, and that distinction was so incredibly important in that healing process, and him being able to speak that truth about who I am versus the shame and some of the identity stuff that I had wrestled with.
That's right.
When I think of God being disappointed, what I think of is because of his great love. You know, God is love, right? And agape love means what's in the best interest of the other person. So when we do something that's hurtful or sinful or something that we would be disappointing, it's like God is so loving that it breaks his heart. That's why this Bible says that the Spirit of God grieves when we hurt ourselves. And that's what sin does. It hurts us. It hurts others. So God's disappointment isn't a disappointment in you, in your nature. It's literally a disappointment in this behavior that is painful and hurtful to you and to others. It's his great love.
That's where the disappointment or sadness comes from. It's how what I did impacted me, or how it impacted someone else. Yeah. And it's okay that God's going, oh, I have so much better for you than that. And okay. I want to embrace that too. And that's the pathway we somehow got to get on. And Kyle, I know we're running out of time here. If this guy were in your office, and not to the end of it where he's asking these questions yet, because I know there's other people probably just saying that, gosh, I feel so unworthy. I feel averted gazes when I walk into a room. I feel like I'm being unseen by people I care about. What would you say to them? How would you begin to steer that heart?
I guess there's actually a conversation that comes to mind that I had with a client that was very much in line with this. And I had the client, it's called the empty chair technique. It's a counseling technique. And I literally had the client sit in one chair, and then I put another chair across from him. And I said, okay, you're sitting in the chair across from you, and I want you to verbalize everything you think other people see in you. I want you to just say it to yourself. Go. And the stuff that client said to that empty chair was absolutely devastating.
Wow.
It was no wonder that they were in the debilitated space that they were in. And that was the first space was they needed to hear. They had never verbalized the internal way that they'd been treating their own heart, the way that they had been allowing like the negative internal dialogue that had been about who they were as a person. And that was the first time it had ever come out.
Wow.
And so for some people, that's the first place to have the conversation is just, what is your view of yourself? What do you think other people are saying about yourself? that's one potential route I would take with that person. But that's such a hard question, Wayne, because every single time somebody's come into my office and we've had this conversation, God shows up differently.
Yeah, that's
like that. I mean, there's so many different things that I can think of that God prompted me to either say or walk that person through. Because I guess what I would say internally to myself is, my friend, you have a loving Father who moved heaven and earth to bring you into this room in this day to have this conversation, to hopefully start you in a different direction and to know a deeper experience of His love. And so, Father, what does that look like for this person, and where do we go?
That's awesome.
Is the internal dialogue that I'd be having as I'm walking with that client through that situation.
Yeah, and I like the reminder that no technique is going to work on every. The Holy Spirit is so present to take each person along.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.